Okay, Moshe, in the Perkin and Torah, we're up to in this brisa of the 48 ways to number 22. Today, 22, 23, and 24 end the first half of the 48, the ones that all start with a base. We've had until now, Bim Miyatayno, Bim Miyatzicha, Bishimish Chachamim, and so on, Bibina Saleh. So that group, so to speak, the very first day, I think I gave you different ways to divide it. So anyway, we're up to number 22. It says, Belev Tov. Belev Tov is a good heart. We know that earlier on, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we read the Mishnah where he instructed his five Talmidim to find what is the best midah to attain. And there were different suggestions, but the one proposed by Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch was one he liked the best, because all the others fell under Lev Tov, including, seeing the good in people, being able to be a good friend, good Neshachin Tov, and Rotz Hanola, all those things are included under Lev Tov. But as again, I pointed out then, I point out again now, Lev, I've mentioned many times, Lev is, in our parlance, usually associated with the heart, the seat of emotion, and so on, which it is, but it's also the seat of intellect, the same belief, Beinu Lahavin. Okay, a person has to hear with his heart as well. And when you learn, it's not simply, as I said, an intellectual discipline, but it's also an emotional, it's an experiential activity. And that's why you have to have a lev tov. It has to penetrate your heart. And that's why we say, the same belief, Beinu Lahavin Lahaskil. It's not just the intellectual knowledge, but it's the knowledge that's transformed into action and into a person's attitude, the way a person thinks about life and approaches life. That's the lev tov. Rachmana Libaboy, the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants what's in the heart. It does not mean that all that matters is, I'm a good Jew at heart. Sometimes people say that, I'm a good Jew at heart. I heard once someone quip that, I think you're running a risk of a heart attack because you put all your Judaism in your heart and no other organs are involved, and then you're putting too much burden on one organ. So the idea, again, he meant it to tongue-in-cheek, but it's a good point. It's not all the lev, Rachmana Libaboy, just everything is the heart. It's the heart that's the seat of emotion, but also the seat of a certain amount of understanding and intellect that gives a person more than just accumulating information. Torah is not just accumulating information, but it's making that a part of you. It changes your attitude. It changes who you are. Incidentally, it also does something else, and it goes back to what we spoke about earlier, being critical in a positive way. If you have a good heart and you're not jealous of somebody else because that other person maybe is stronger in learning or maybe was more successful, okay? The truth of the matter is, someone pointed out that that's the godless of the Shulchan Aruch, which is the work that we're learning this year, right? Yoredeya. Shulchan Aruch is Yosef Karo and the Ramah. And, the Ramah originally, those who know the history, the Ramah originally set out to write, his own work, basically, independent of what Rabbi Yosef Karo was writing. He wasn't necessarily aware of what Rabbi Yosef Karo was writing, and must have done some work on that. But then once the Shulchan Aruch came out, the Rabbi Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Moore realized that a good part of his work was not necessary in the same way, and therefore he changed his work to be, in effect, what they call glosses, right, comments on the Mechaber. Now today, you read, as we did this whole year, as we're continuing to do, you read some of the Shulchan Aruch, you read one, it goes seamlessly one into the other. The Ramah is printed in Rashi script. I mentioned in the past, it has nothing to do with Rashi, just as we would call today a different font, right? The Ramah is written in a different font, just so we can distinguish. But the point of the Ramah was he felt that there was valid, that the work of the Mechaber, Yosef Karo, was valuable, and there was willingness to use his work to share information and feel good about the accomplishment of others. So this is the idea of a good heart also in terms of learning, that you have to be open to other people's thinking and not be jealous or not be, driven by, I know more than him and so on and so forth. So that's, I think, important in terms of lev tov. The next one, number 23, is a loaded phrase, b'emunas chachamim. It's really a very, very, in a certain sense, difficult phrase to understand, and there's a large range of interpretations on this, okay? But basically the most accepted or widespread interpretation. One of the Chachamim is basically is accepting our belief in Mesorah, in tradition, in the validity of Torah Shebal Peh, and so on, and in the Chachamah of the Gemara, and not only the Gemara, but the great works of our great Chachamim throughout the centuries and throughout the ages. Okay, and while we believe in Chiddush in the sense of some innovation, on the other hand, everything has to be is looked through the lens of there can be innovation, there can be creativity, but through the lens of tradition. And that's the idea of Emunas Chachamim. Right? It's an all-inclusive kind of statement. And, it's really the key to everything. It appreciates the greatness of the Chachamim. All right. It also leads us to be, not so quick to make decisions and to innovate on our own. There's chiddush, there's shinui. There can be certain changes, and it depends. We don't say there can be no changes. I mean, the Chassam Sofer's tongue-in-cheek remark, Chodesh Osman HaTorah, was not intended to be a world view. Okay, there can be certain changes. But depends who's promulgating those changes and what situation they're promulgating those changes. A lot of people, one person in my shul always likes to point this out, people are waiting for what's called the Zman of Rabbeinu Tam, the 72 minutes after Shkia, the Matzoi Shabbos. That's known as the Sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. But it's not just the Sheet of Rabbeinu Tam, it's the Sheet of most Rishonim, okay? And it's also the Sheet accepted in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Ramah doesn't disagree. Right, and it means you have a later shkia. The daytime goes longer than what we view outside as the astronomical sunset. And for a long time, people followed that as the primary shita. Well, not just Rabbeinu Tam; it was just Chumra and some yeshivas. Okay, that was really this. As I said, that's the zman that it appears that the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch accepts, and Ramah doesn't disagree. And that was accepted as a long, both for the beginning of Shabbos, and of course the end of Shabbos, it makes it later, but also makes the beginning of Shabbos later, that they were not worried about what we call astronomical sunset for Mincha and so on. The one who kind of orchestrated the change with the force was the Vilna Gaon. And so in Litvish circles to this day, okay, Yeshivish circles to this day, so the Vilna Gaon won the day on this issue, and we consider Shkia to be when the sun sets, and therefore we start Shabbos 18 minutes before the sun sets, not this later time. Some people are machmir on both ends, fine, they were for Rabbeinu Tam. But, I've read that when the Chassidim first came to America, and we became part of the Satmar Rav, for example, they did not start Shabbos till well after sunset. They followed the other Zman. Again, it's not just the Sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. It was the Sheetah that people followed in Europe and other places. So what's my point? My point is it can be changed. It was a sea change, really. Today, everybody, but Chassidim also, they start Shabbos. They don't do Malacha after sunset. On Friday afternoon, it became the interest because that change was presented or promulgated by someone with the stature of the Vilna Gaon. Right, every other Tom, Dick, and Harry, even Rabbi Tom, Dick, and Harry, can't, just decide he's going to change things. That's the idea of Emunas Chachamim. We have traditions, okay, and we have, as I say, we have faith that the Chachamim knew what they were doing, and we follow that Mesorah. So this is really a very complicated or detailed point. We also believe in Emunas Chachamim that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives a certain amount of siyata d'shmaya to those people who are in the forefront of Pasuk and Shilas and so on and so forth. And when these people say, to go back to the previous statement, Libi Omerli, okay, they have an intuition because of their experience, because of the breadth of their knowledge, their intuition, even though they can't prove it and so on, should be taken very, very seriously because that's what Emunas Chachamim, what Emunas Chachamim is. And therefore, we defer to their guidelines. There is a lot of discussion about that right now. Okay, with the shuls are discussing opening up with numbers of people and indoors and outdoors and so on and so forth. So obviously the Chachamim have to consult with the medical experts, but there are different views and so on amongst medical experts, and which is okay. But you have to decide that even I may think one way, but if the Gedolim of my time say something different, then that's what I do. That's the Emunas Chachamim. Okay. Now, of course, there is a adjunct to this, which is another hotly debated subject. Does Emunas Chachamim extend beyond the realm of Torah to other things, to politics, to public policy, these kinds of things? So that already is an interesting question. Okay, In other words, do I have to do what the Chachamim say, you know, the Rebbe says in terms of who to vote for and whether we should accept this policy? That's already much more of a gray area, not to mention personal advice, right? Personal directions. I mean, clearly, this is we have different positions on this issue in the Jewish community today. Clearly, a Rav, or maybe a great Talmud Chacham, has no right to paskin on an issue where he doesn't, to give advice on an issue he doesn't know. Unfortunately, you know, my wife, you know, was for many years worked in oncology as a, you know, clinical director and so on in the oncology department at NYU Medical Center. And sometimes there were a lot of frum patients, unfortunately, Shomer Shabbos. And some of the people would say, well, after the doctor recommended the treatment X, Y, and Z, well, let me see what my rabbi has to say. I don't know. The rabbi has to know medicine, or at least has to speak to people who know medicine. Just the rough to give some sort of a, well, I think this, I think that. You know, what is on? You know, it could be have tragic results. Okay, but the idea is that a real Talmud Chacham, you know, is not going to be molded by prejudices and by politics and have an agenda and so on and so forth. And that makes you know, that makes their word greatly valuable. But in any event, this is a. At the same time, I think I want to stress that the concept of Emunas Chachamim does not mean that the Chachamim are infallible. We don't believe that. Okay, no man is infallible. Okay, that's okay. I mean, sometimes people can admit that they made a mistake. I was just actually this morning discussing with my wife, you know, that part of the problem in politics today, at least in this country, I'm sure elsewhere in the world too, is that nobody wants to get up and say, I made a mistake. I admit I was wrong. I thought this, and not everybody's busy trying to justify why it was really okay, and so on and so forth. Okay, and you know, that doesn't mean that people are, you know, are infallible. We know that there were Chachamim who did not see or understand what was going on in the Holocaust and counseled people, you know, not to leave Europe right away and so on. It was, you know, you know, but. You know, it is not, so the positions are certainly not infallible. Even in Torah, the people are not infallible. Sometimes people make a mistake. We have in the Gemara, Mishnah Rishon and Mishnah Chona, right? What they thought at first, and they changed their, you know, they changed it. So the idea of Emunas Chachamim does not mean infallibility, but it's it lets us acquire Torah because we respect. It's not, again, it's not, should not be used as, well, you know, my Rav said this, and therefore anyone who doesn't believe it is crazy, and so on. That's also no good. Okay, that's also no good. You know, the Netziv, which I've mentioned many times, you should read his Hakdama. If you've never done it, read his Hakdama to the Hamikdavar in Bereishis, the first page. It's a beautiful little piece, not long. It's not even one full page. Okay? And he says that the, you know, in the time of the Churban, the Bayis Sheni, part of the problem was because people were tzaddikim, so to speak, okay, who followed only their one Rav's view, and they were intolerant of people who had a different view, okay, and, you know, that led to disaster, because it doesn't mean, my Emunas Chachamim doesn't mean that it's only my, you know, my view that counts, or my Rav's view that counts. So Emunas Chachamim, as I say, is a loaded term. It's necessary that you have to accept our tradition, and that the Torah came from Har Sinai, and then the Chachamim, you know, offered additional layers of interpretation based on their traditions and their insights, and the importance of Gemara, importance of Chazal, and importance of following the Rabbanim in our own generation, who have more insight and more breadth of knowledge than we have. However, again, it does not imply infallibility. So Emunas Chachamim is something which you can spend a lot of time on. It requires further thought. Finally, the last one for today, number 24, but Kabbalas Hayisurim, accepting pain and suffering, accepting pain and suffering. Okay, this is a very, very difficult idea. Okay, we'll have to see how it works in terms of why it's one of the Kinyan Torah, okay, steps. But accepting suffering means that sometimes a person has bad things happen to good people, okay? We understand that adversity and suffering has a purpose. This is what the book of Eov is about. Obviously, why bad things happen to good people. The Ramban is introduction to Koheles, right? That is one of the themes of Koheles as well. And it means that sometimes we have to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu even under trying circumstances. And again, I mentioned to my shul during this COVID-19 virus situation that this is what our challenge is now, to accept and serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu under these more trying conditions, not the way we've been accustomed to. Kabbalah says Yisurin, and again, we accept suffering, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Maybe it's due to averus, yifash b'shemayso, that a person should look into his deeds. That's what Gemara says in Brachos Daf Hey, you know, but sometimes the Yisurin shall ava. Okay, it sometimes brings about a kapara for a person. There are many different points. The Kabbalah says, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu visits somebody with the Yisurin. If you're interested, it's probably posted on Yitari. I gave a shiur on the outside of Aaron Lichon, around the time of the outside of Aaron Lichon, in his view on suffering and punishment. So it's posted on Yitari. If you'd like to hear that, then I can send it to Mark Cohen's, which I typed out. If anybody wants, similar to the same style I do in our shiurim. But anyway, there is suffering. The question is, what does it have to do with learning? Why it's a good mida in general, but what's it have to do with taka with Kinyan Torah? And I think that the idea is that sometimes pursuing the Torah itself is difficult. I mentioned this in the past. Sometimes living by Torah law and sometimes learning means you have to deprive yourself of other things. Okay, and we mentioned earlier, right? It's beneficial to you in the long run, but it's difficult. It's a challenge. Okay, somebody who wants to set aside time learning has to give up other things. And sometimes I wouldn't necessarily call it pain and suffering, but it is sacrifice in a certain sense. Okay, a person can perhaps sometimes, you know, you could, if you stayed at work or worked overtime, you can make another few dollars, okay, and have greater material success, but you decided, no, you're not doing that. You want to spend time learning, even if it means I'm going to be a little less comfortable materially. That's part of the Kabbalah Sayyisur. That's part of the readiness to deprive yourself of some kind of financial gain for the sake of Torah. Again, we spoke earlier, it doesn't mean you don't have to work for a living and make a parnasa, but you know, there's always more you can make, there's always more you can do. And at one point, the person has to draw a line and say, I've done what I have to do, even though I could stay extra, I could stay late, I could work overtime, I could whatever. But if I have this goal to be involved in Torah, so then I have to accept whatever, again, Yisur may be a strong word for this interpretation, but whatever challenges there are sometimes be some challenge and there may be a little bit of suffering. And furthermore, even if a person is physically sick, the Rambam says this explicitly in the beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah, that everybody is required to learn, even if a person is sick. You can't say, I'm too sick to be able to learn, I'm too old, I'm too infirm. Okay, there are Yisurim, there are challenges. Everybody has challenges. Everybody at whatever age has challenges. If we understand Yisurim as challenges and as difficulties in life, there are bumps in the road for everybody. Things don't go always as smoothly as hoped and as planned. And a person who sticks with it, sticks with the program, says, no, I'm still going to set aside time for learning. I'm still going to make sure I go to shul properly. And whatever else is going on, that's the person who's going to be successful. And basically, I've mentioned in the past, if you have your eye on a higher goal here is achieving success in Torah, then you'll be willing, just like people are willing to undergo pain and suffering for other things. Okay, when I mentioned as an example, you know, certain people who will risk life and limb to go discover something or to go bring about bring someone to justice or to exact revenge or, you know, things that drive people to do things even though it compromises their physical well-being. Okay, well, the same thing, you have to be ready for Torah. Sometimes you have to be willing to forego certain pleasures, and more than forego certain pleasures, be willing to, for the sake of this greater goal, put up with certain challenges and certain difficulties. Okay, we'll stop over here.